It's not like it's a competition that's on again next year. You have to wait a full Olympic cycle to go again. Realistically, most of the team aren't going to be here again for the next Olympics, so it's like it's do or die.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM. With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
What about your own personal position? Every day the newspapers are saying he's worth £5 million. Real Madrid want to sign him. Blackburn want to sign him. Liverpool want to sign him. What is the position?
Well, the position's simple. I'm on a contract for another season and a half. And I've discussed a new contract at Forest. And, you know, if I get the right deal, I'm prepared to stay. Because, to me, this is the best club in England. And I have a lot to learn. And I don't think I can learn at any better place than another playing club.
It is time for Deal or No Deal here on ODBAM, which is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Our experts today are Nathan Murphy and Will O'Callaghan. And as Harry Kane continues to sit out Spurs training, latest reports suggest that Manchester City are confident that they can sign the English striker for £130 million, not the £160 million that Tottenham Hotspur want for him. The Guardian report that he's expected back at the club in the coming days following a period of self-isolating after a trip to the Bahamas. If you were a member of Tottenham Hotspur's top brass, what would your strategy be to deal with the situation, Nathan?
If you're Daniel Levy, you're thinking all your Christmases have come at once. This is the perfect scenario for him. Suddenly, there's the first inkling that Harry Kane could be the bad guy in all of this. So Daniel Levy is well used to being in that position, that he's a man who, you know, cannot match the ambition of the Tottenham players, the Tottenham supporters. The club's flakiness is largely down to him and his reluctance to properly invest in the club and support managers the way he should. Whereas now he knows, worst case scenario, Harry Kane stays at the club and scores 20 Premier League goals this season and puts them in the fight for top four. Worst case scenario, he can just hold out and get maybe that 160 million, which goes a long way to paying off that enormous debt that they have on the stadium. Leave it so long, there's not much time for you to properly reinvest in a replacement. You probably signed Danny Ings 5 minutes before deadline day for 20 million from Southampton and hope he gets you 15 goals and somehow appeases the Spurs supporters. But I think this has swung more in Tottenham's favour over the last 48 hours. And Miguel Delaney was interesting last night and off the ball saying there's a sense from within Tottenham that Kane has bottled it. The fact that he's going back to training, that, you know, this bizarre sense from Kane's camp yesterday that he couldn't understand what all the fuss was about. I didn't turn up for training. I told my England teammates I wasn't going to turn up for training. I didn't do it. How is this front page, back page news? So I think actually from a Tottenham point of view, considering we've known for months that he wants to go, this has worked out quite well for them over the last couple of days.
Will, how would Kane fit into Pep's City side?
Really well. I mean, he's pretty much the perfect signing that they could make, given that he's got proven Premier League pedigree, given the fact that he'll play in the number nine position, but is happy enough to drift around a little bit and to allow players like the attacking midfielders that Manchester City have to go ahead of him if required too. Like, he would be the perfect focal point for that Manchester City attack. I can't think of a better player in Europe currently who would be a like-for-like replacement for Sergio Aguero and an upgrade on Sergio Aguero too if they could bring him in. That's why I think if you're Manchester City's board currently, you're probably just, if you can get him for 130, as the Athletic seem to be claiming over the last 24 hours, add 30 million to the bid. I thought it was interesting that they went in with 100 million for Grealish, which surely would have been a rubbing the hands moment for Daniel Levy too, when you think they're willing to go to that level for Jack Grealish from Aston Villa. We hold all the cards here because Harry Kane signed that six-year contract and is under contract at White Hart Lane until 2025. So therefore, they've got no great need to sell in terms of his contract running down. And also, they know that realistically, Manchester City, maybe Manchester United, are the only clubs in Europe who can currently afford him. So it's a case of, if City aren't willing to pay for it, maybe Manchester United will, but they know the City are going to have to cough up that money. And City have kind of backed themselves into a little bit of position here because they're having to work with Daniel Levy a couple of weeks out from the start of the new Premier League season, where they don't really have a recognised number nine, unless they want to play Gabriel Jesus into that position. But generally, they've been reluctant enough to do so over the last season. And, you know, Jesus's injuries haven't helped the situation either. So City desperately need a focal point striker at this point. Tottenham know that there's a desperation from City to try and sign one, and therefore they're going to sit back and make sure that they get close to that 160 million. Like, Daniel Levy's been here before with Bale, with Berbatov. He will happily wait until the closing moments of the transfer window. But it would seem that maybe their position is softening in terms of selling him when you consider the business that Spurs have been doing with signing players kind of slowly but surely. It almost reminds me of the Gareth Bale summer, when they went and spent quite a bit of the Gareth Bale windfall before the transfer was actually sanctioned. And that would give, I think, City a little bit of hope, where you see Spurs doing business at 40 million, bringing a player or two in now. Maybe it's going to be a case their position will soften. But you know, you think about it, Nathan, I think Harry Kane's absolutely perfect for City's system.
Oh, like, this is the most important transfer of the summer. Like, it's basically Manchester City hitting cheat mode if they sign both Jack Grealish and Harry Kane. They will win the league. They have to win the league. It would be the greatest failure of Pep Guardiola's management career if they sign Harry Kane and Jack Grealish and Manchester City don't win the league. Remember, there were matches at the end of last season where City had a bench that was worth around 350, 400 million. And then you're going to add in two of the best players in the Premier League to that. Kane is perfect. He is, as you say, a match of Aguero at his peak. He will be playing under a different level of pressure. I know his Premier League record is insane and may well go on to be the greatest Premier League and all-time Premier League leading scorer. But at Manchester City, he'll have a different pressure. He'll have to do it in the biggest Champions League game. The expectation would be not just that they win the Premier League, that they win the Champions League as well. And I think if Kane signs for Manchester City, nobody can stop them this season, regardless of Manchester United, regardless of Chelsea, if they sign Lukaku, regardless if Liverpool go in and invest big. You look at the talent that was already there and you add in Grealish and Kane, this has to be an unstoppable force. But against that, if they don't sign Kane, I think the others will feel they have a real opportunity, because like Gabriel Jesus is just not up to it. Last season, Gundogan was their top scorer with what? Was it 13 Premier League goals? I don't think that's sustainable for another season. So, like, Kane is make or break in the title race.
You mentioned Lukaku there. He could be set for a sensational return to the Premier League. The Metro report that Inter Milan are willing to sell him to Chelsea for a £100 million fee to balance their books. The Sun report that he feels he has unfinished business at the London side. How poorly does his post-Manchester United hot streak reflect, I should say, on the club and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for failing to keep him at Old Trafford is what it says here, Nathan.
I think that's very harsh on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, isn't it? Lukaku never worked at Manchester United. Their style of play never worked at Manchester United. They never got him released in behind. If he was going to a Manchester United right now, you would think actually he could be a perfect fit for United. But like, so many games I remember commenting on where he was such a peripheral figure, like the matches against Liverpool where I don't even think Van Dijk put a tackle in him at any stage. He had just such control, and Lukaku's positioning was totally off, and physically, bizarrely, just couldn't seem to match him. But I don't think you can put all that on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think the seeds had probably been well sown at that stage by Jose Mourinho and what had gone wrong at Manchester United. But you can understand completely why Chelsea would want him, and it seems Inter Milan, like a lot of clubs around Europe, need the cash, and there's no faith in Timo Werner. Like, the comments after their friendly against Arsenal at the weekend from Thomas Tuchel certainly wouldn't have done Timo Werner's confidence any good at all. That basically, you know, we just got to hope that it starts happening for him. And listen, he's very likable, Timo Werner. He's full of energy. Will try his best, but much like Alvaro Morata, you sort of look at him and think, four chances for one. That's not Romelu Lukaku. Romelu Lukaku comes in, he's probably going to get you 20 Premier League goals this season.
Jose is to blame for Lukaku at United, not Solskjaer, by the way. That's what I think is harsh about it. I think there were still inklings of Lukaku at Manchester United that he could break out under a bit of a better manager, under a better game plan. And I think you're right that as things have slowly got better over the course of the last season, you're like, it could work, a bit of a reunion. But
we should remember as well, sorry, with Lukaku.
Jose had him at Chelsea
first
too.
Season, yeah. His first season at Manchester United, Lukaku got 16 Premier League goals. Right now, Manchester United would be crying out for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, like, and I think it was just kind of things started to get worse, and there was like maybe... Who would have thought it? The manager who manages to suck confidence out of his players did the exact same thing with Romelu Lukaku when there was the first sign of weakness maybe in his confidence. Jose just exacerbated that. That's certainly how I recall it. Maybe I'm misremembering, but that's certainly how it seemed to me. Just how, this is a really good piece of business for Chelsea if it does happen, Will, right?
Yeah, look, 24 goals in Serie A last season. He was the best player in Serie A too. He's added a lot to his game under Antonio Conte. He upped his work rate last season. Now you can see why Conte has left. When you see what's happening at Inter Milan currently, where, you know, Hakimi left for big money to PSG as they tried to clear down the financial issues that they have. And now it would appear that one of two is going to leave. It's either going to be Romelu Lukaku or Lautaro Martinez. One of the two will be leaving in this window. And Inter seemed determined, a little bit like Spurs, that 100 million is the price that they want. This initial bid from Chelsea, which was rejected according to Sky in Italy, Chelsea were valuing it at around 100 million pounds when they considered it was 85 cash up front, plus Marcus Alonso, who Inter have been kind of long-term admirers of the left wing back, who I'm sure Chelsea would be happy enough to get off their books as part of this deal. They reckon that it's coming pretty close to being able to get an agreement. I think if you're Inter and you get to keep the slightly younger player in Martinez around the club, it probably doesn't look terrible business for Inter either. Yeah. But they are losing, obviously, the focal point of their attack from last season. For Chelsea, as Nathan said, it's a guaranteed 20 Premier League goals for next season. And also for Timo Werner, crucially, it might mean that he can move out to his preferred position on the left again if they've got a centre forward who they can play up front. And maybe that can just get Timo Werner back into form. If Chelsea sign Romelu Lukaku, the amount of attacking options they have is scary, but it's just a case of trying to find a way for them to click, because I think it's fair to say last season that it didn't happen entirely either for Kai Havertz or for Hakim Ziyech. And crucially, they want to try and get them into, you know, a working forward line with Christian Pulisic also there as an option. They have an embarrassment of riches, but maybe not quite the blend just yet. Can Lukaku be the final piece of the jigsaw that might work?
Havertz is under pressure to have a breakout season because literally everybody has said, watch out for Kai Havertz next season. He's going to absolutely break out. So fresh reports suggesting that there is no substance to the story suggesting that Liverpool are interested in Inter and Italy's Nicolò Barella and ready to pay 70 million euro for him. The editor of an Italian football news site has told the Blood Red Liverpool fan channel that this story has been fanned by the footballer's agent while negotiating new terms with the Italian champions. Nathan, who should Liverpool be signing in this window, and are they ready to compete for the title again?
Competing for the title, I think, again, depends on if Manchester City sign Harry Kane. I think it's going to be almost impossible for them to compete for the title. I think they're going to be a hell of a lot more consistent and better than they were last season. But you look at the names they've been linked with, and they've been linked with dozens of names, and they're clearly being used by agents across Europe to throw players' names out there in the hope of getting them a new contract. Like, they're not, it seems, competing at that very top level. Over the new year, you know, there was speculation that they were in for Kylian Mbappe potentially. Like, that has gone very quiet. And at that stage, I thought, wow, if Liverpool are back in the market for a player of that caliber, you would expect them to be contending and probably winning the Premier League. But it seems with the way they're going about the business, again, they're just going to be reliant on the genius and the brilliance and the passion of Jurgen Klopp to bring the best out of everybody. It looks as though they're looking at Thiago and Diogo Jota almost as their two new signings right now, unless they have plans going on in the background. But that Jota get a full season out of them, Thiago get a full season out of them. But it does feel as though they're light in midfield in particular. I know if everyone was fit, you're looking going, well, 4-3 doesn't fit last season with Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago and Wijnaldum. But suddenly you find yourself in a position with who is the backup if one of those players isn't fit. Are they going to go with Naby Keita and
Curtis Jones,
trust them to play Curtis Jones and trust them to play 25 games? Like, maybe they have seen enough in Curtis Jones. But when you look at the investment that everybody else is making, like, one injury suddenly means Curtis Jones is having to start pretty much every single match. And again, one transfer maybe changes that, but it does feel as though, I thought that FSG would respond like a lot of the owners and feel under pressure to make a massive investment. But when you're looking at Barella or Insignia or Adama Traore, they're not definite game changers, not definite starters. But it does come down to a lot of the same questions are there. Remember, we ended last season wondering about Mane and Salah.
Like, yeah.
Do Mane and Salah get on? Is there an issue there? Like, that hasn't been fixed. They're going to still start every single game, you feel, for Liverpool next season. So listen, unless they've always gone about their business quietly, I do think they need one or two more players just to keep some pressure on as reinforcements, because you'd expect that somebody like Minamino is going to end up going alone. So right now, do I see them as contenders. If City sign Kane, I don't. But if City don't sign Kane, I think, yeah, they'll definitely still have a chance. A
couple of Irish ones to go through really quickly before we wrap. James McCarthy is a Celtic player. If he can stay fit, how much game time will he see in Scotland? And what impact can a fit McCarthy have on Stephen Kenny's Ireland side? Nathan, you go first here.
Stephen Kenny loves James McCarthy, started him over in the playoff in Slovakia, would love him, I think, to be that number six and the man who is starting moves and sort of opens everything up. We just haven't seen that James McCarthy being fit enough for long enough for Ireland in particular. He's played a lot more game time, thankfully, at club level over the last couple of years. We saw what Shane Duffy did at Celtic, which unfortunately wasn't very much, and the love he had for Celtic and the reasons he went there. James McCarthy, maybe not quite as an emotional figure as Shane Duffy, but again, going there as a Celtic supporter on a four-year contract, which seems like absolute insanity considering his injury record. Listen, if he can play every single game and he wants to play for Ireland, he'll more than likely be in and around that Ireland team. But I'm at this stage, unfortunately, probably past getting overly excited.
And Will, for you, according to The Sun, Blackburn are keen to sign Southampton and Ireland's Michael Obafemi, and the Saints are valuing him at £6 million. Would a move to the Championship be good for him?
Yeah, definitely. He needs to be playing. That's the crucial thing. I mean, Obafemi's been lucky with injuries over the last couple of seasons. Not as unlucky as the aforementioned James McCarthy, who's had one season in five where he's played more than 20 games. But, you know, for Obafemi, he needs to get out, play football, get back scoring goals again. We see flashes from him over the last couple of years, you know, particularly in bigger games where Southampton are playing on the counter-attack, that Obafemi's pace can be really, really threatening, even against the very best opposition. I think Blackburn would be a good move. They've got a few of their Irish players there. Hopefully he can play himself back into contention, because we need as many Irish forwards, particularly of this young generation, back playing and actually scoring to give Stephen Kenny a few choices. I personally think, just on the McCarthy side, it's mental to think that Celtic will be paying him when he's 35, when the last five seasons would indicate that really he can't stay fit for longer than a few months. Great move for McCarthy, you know, fantastic to get a four-year contract, but if I'm a Celtic fan, I can't believe that they've handed that type of contract out, or given a million of the Queen's pounds for Joe Hart, who in theory is not a goalkeeper that suits their profile whatsoever.
No, that's for sure. Will O'Callaghan, Nathan Murphy, great stuff. That is today's Deal or No Deal.
I signed for them after the Euros, and after my first day's training, I was driving home, I was actually thinking,
regretting it,
what have I done? I walked into a circus.
It's amazing, isn't it?